It's a new year with new possibilities on the horizon for Oregon's largest city. Portland has a new form of government full of fresh faces tasked with tackling the city's biggest issues.
Portland, we have heard your call for change.
One of the key priorities from voters last election, the economy. The Portland Metro has faced its fair share of challenges over the last several years.
While the U.S. economy continues to expand, our community is not.
From slowing job growth to a housing affordability crisis.
I think one thing that definitely needs to change is the housing prices.
But where do we stand now?
When we're struggling for jobs here, people are going to look for opportunities to progress.
We discuss the annual State of the Economy report for the Metro, the key challenges facing the region, and why an economist says now is a critical time. Right now on Straight Talk.
And thanks for joining us here on Straight Talk. I'm Stephanie Domerat. Today, we are getting a look at the economic health of Oregon's biggest city and how we're doing following several years of post-pandemic challenges. The Portland Metro Chamber releases a State of the Economy report each year to give us an overview of how the metro is doing. You may have heard the term recently, urban doom loop. It's been a headline this week. And today, we will dig a little deeper into what that means and what can be done. I'm pleased to have with us today Andrew Hone, the president and CEO of Portland Metro Chamber. Andrew became president of the chamber in 2018. Before joining the chamber, Andrew was president and CEO of the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce. Locally, he also serves on the board of directors for the Black Business Association of Oregon. He spent time on Mayor Ted Wheeler's Council of Economic Advisors, and last year was named a Portland Business Journal Executive of the Year. Also joining us, Mike Wilkerson. He earned his PhD in economics and politics from Claremont Graduate University. Mike is a partner and director of economic research at Echo Northwest. He's also an adjunct professor in the Master of Real Estate Development Program at Portland State University. He was the lead economist on this year's report. Andrew and Mike, thank you so much for being here today. It's a big topic, so we're going to dive right into it. But before we get to the numbers, I want to ask you first, Andrew, what grade would you give the Portland metro area right now after seeing this report?
Thanks for having us on. And, you know, I'm a proud Portland public school parent of two and soon to be three children. And the grade is something that I think any PPS parent would know, which is we are at a one, which is not at grade level. And that is true for both how anybody can react to this data, how we stack up against our peers that we compete against, and then also how we're stacking up against the U.S. economy. So we are not where we need to be.
One out of a scale of what?
Four. One to four.
One to four. Okay. So let's talk about some good news that we saw in this report. Portland did make some significant strides last year when it comes to the central city. So crime in the central city declined. We saw police take a more aggressive approach, getting drug use off the streets when controlled substances became illegal again. Fentanyl deaths decreased. Emergency shelter capacity expanded, though homelessness does remain a top priority. And approval ratings improved. A poll conducted by DHM Research in December asked people in Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties if they feel their county is on the right track. Now, the poll found 38% said that their county is on the wrong track. Though that's not a great number, it's actually better than what we saw in 2021, which was 62%. So, Andrew, what were your thoughts on that change from a 38% now versus the 62 before?
I think the reason why our economic report is so jarring is because I think so many people in our community are feeling better about our community. And that's what this poll that we conducted represents, is feelings. And the reason we're feeling better is because what's happening? Safety is improving. Livability conditions are improving. We're seeing less people on the street. We are seeing focused interventions on issues like public drug use. And all the sort of manifestations of our challenges have seen marked improvement. And that's evidenced in all the statistics. And voters are now finally responding to that. And so I think overall what you're seeing is a focused intervention by public and private partnerships that have produced those results. I'll call out the Central City Task Force as a prime example of when we work together on very focused interventions that we can make improvements. So I think voters are largely saying, hey, this feels better to us. Mm-hmm. That stands in stark contrast to the information you'll see in the economic report.
I want to ask you, Mike, how do these numbers compare to before the pandemic, these approval or disapproval ratings?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're getting very close back to where they were pre-pandemic, okay. which is a good sign because typically, you know, sentiment is really hard and slow moving. And so the fact that that much progress has been made in the last 2 years, I think is a great sign. Is it where everyone wants it to be? Certainly not, but we're getting real close to where we were pre-pandemic.
Let's talk about the core of the metro, Portland's downtown. We touched on it a bit. We did see progress there as well. More people coming to downtown. That same poll found about 2 out of 3 people visited downtown in 2024, as opposed to about 1 in 2 who said that the year before. So that is also good news. Mike, how important is public perception?
It's really important. I mean, I think when people are looking at their choices and where they spend their time and their resource, understanding that people are, you know, react to positive momentum. And so I think you start to see things like a priority on events, activations in the central city, and people are reacting to that when they have that positive perception much more so, which means the time is ripe to really understand that as perceptions have changed, those interventions are going to be much more effective now than they would have been at a time when perceptions weren't where they are.
Yeah, nice. Did you expect this improvement, Andrew?
Not the dramatic nature of it.
Oh,
and
good.
One that really stuck out to us was the feelings that people had about being safe in downtown. And it saw a 20% spike. And that is not a, you know, abnormality or statistical, you know, fluke. It is a dramatic improvement. And I think we had a lot of people asking us that question last year. Hey, why haven't the numbers moved so much? And to Mike's point, we've heard the axiom that, you know, you take the elevator down in reputation and you walk the stairs back up. And I think this is evidence of that playing out in real time.
Okay, that's great. And speaking of perception, though, let's talk about maybe some less good news here. Portland ranked second to last in a national real estate attractiveness survey or study, 80th out of 81 in front of only Hartford, Connecticut. The top spot, by the way, was Dallas, Texas. So, Mike, who ranks this and what exactly does national real estate attractiveness mean?
Yeah, it's a great question. So Urban Land Institute produces a report every year called Emerging Trends. And in that, they survey something like 2,000 members of the commercial real estate industry from around the country. So brokers, lenders, developers, consultants, and really they're trying to get an understanding of which markets are most attractive for investment. And so this is particularly new investment. This isn't transactions. This is putting dollars to bear to actually grow the stock of housing or office or whatever it might be. And so I think for us, this was probably the most surprising result because we've just talked about the market improvement in livability. The assumption is that would be well known around the country. And unfortunately, we took a huge step down. And this is probably, I would say, amongst the largest, if not the largest, headwind we face today, which is Portland in 2017 was the third highest ranked market, attracted a lot of capital. And that building boom that we saw delivering consistently thousands of units of new construction of housing was largely fueled by that effort. And today, when we look at what's being built in the city as being much less combined with that perception, that's a real challenge.
We have a graphic that shows that actually, as you mentioned, when we were really high here, the top 96%. And you can see just over the last 2 decades, really, what we just got this year was not great, was a far cry from what we saw before. Have we seen anything like this where in less than 10 years we go from kind of the top to the bottom?
It's fairly atypical. I think the markets that go to the top typically are amongst the same ones that are consistently there. For us, when we look at our peer regions, we reevaluate every 5 years. At the time, we were, you know, prior to this iteration, we were looking at places like Austin and Nashville, Seattle, places that are consistently at the top, and we were amongst that. When we reestablished our peers now, that's a different set of markets, and that was more like in the middle of the rankings. The fact that we then dropped precipitously is, again, a big surprise to everyone.
Is there a silver lining in this with as far as maybe what locals think, as far as that ranking goes?
Yeah, so you can also look at that based on the perception locally. The local perception is, of course, slightly better because mm-hmm. when you're second from the bottom, there's only one direction you can go. what I would say is a little bit troubling is even locally, the perception is something like 70th. And
okay.
so it's an acknowledgement that the challenges here are real from a development perspective. And I think that's, again, something that's useful for us that we can monitor every year. And then the hope is certainly that we rise quickly back up again.
Andrew, as president of the chamber, you speak with other regions and other cities a lot. Were you surprised by this ranking? And do you try to kind of combat this on the national stage as much as you can?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most people should know that the business community wants a sterling reputation nationally. And we've been so focused on those core livability issues for so many years as a business community. This is not traditional. And I think it's why we have to accept that we've had very lowered standards in our community, and to be able to only focus on issues like safety and livability, that's not what a business community should be focused on. It should be talking about attractiveness nationally and courting investment and courting businesses to come here. So I think it is representative of how far we've come down, and the work that's ahead of us is not going to be an easy road forward. But we're in the national news almost on a daily basis, and I think you've seen a really good collaboration amongst government and private sector to start telling the positive stories, because there are those positive stories. I mean, the Ritz-Carlton didn't just accidentally choose to build here. The WNBA isn't choosing to expand its franchise operations here because we're not a good market. So some of this is about a lagging indicator in terms of reputation that is going to take time and focused effort on attracting positive quality stories, earned media, and also doing the hard work of improving our reputation.
Let's talk about the population changes in the metro area. Also not great news. This includes Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington, and Clark County. The report shows that Clark County actually does have some great news. They're doing really great. You can see here on the bottom right of your screen that shows that all of their data is above the zero, so it's only growing. Washington County, which is in the bottom left, it's the only regional county with a noteworthy natural population increase. That's there in orange. And Clackamas County is stagnant. Meantime, Multnomah County, you can see here on the top left, is not seeing gains. In fact, it is losing a lot of people. Mike, can you explain first, as you look at this map and this graph, the difference of these population types and why that's important?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on it. The components of change are important here because some of them are predictable and known and very hard to change, and other ones can course correct very quickly. And so natural change is the one that is known and predictable. And if we look back at the region, let's say a decade ago, 15,000 more people were born every year than died in the region. Today, that number is more like 3,000, and it will soon be zero. And so while we could once count on growth without having to do much, we are now entirely reliant, or soon will be entirely reliant, on migration. And then the question is international versus domestic. And what we see in Multnomah County in particular, and Washington County to a certain extent, is the loss of people domestically. Mm-hmm. That's offset, thankfully, by in-migration internationally, but the root cause of the challenge that we're seeing in this region and many other urban areas that have similar similar circumstances, people are now voting with their feet, and it's not always about where they have traditionally lived.
What do you see as far as an impact on jobs and businesses when it comes to people, you know, leaving the area or moving out of Multnomah County?
Well, first off, we need to attract people to live here, to have a vibrant, growing economy. The other part of this is that we are so dependent on high-income earners now for our tax base. Retaining high-income earners is, in fact, our top priority if we're going to deliver critical services. And I want to point out that we have to acknowledge that being the number one highest taxed location in the nation has a implication. And it's okay to maybe be in a high tax location, but you better be delivering those core services with a plume. And I think we can all acknowledge that's not necessarily happening. And so seeing some of this migration trend is a representation of people choosing lower taxes or higher service values in other locations. That's alarming for all of us because we see that out migration. It will directly impact our taxes. We are all witnessing that in very real time presently.
I want to talk a little bit. I think we have a graphic that will actually show those income levels as they're moving into different counties. One of the things that was significant was that we saw that people who are moving into Multnomah County were making on average just over $73,000 on average. Washington County, just under $90,000. Clackamas and Clark County, though, those had people who were bringing in a household income of $105,000. Annually are up. So this is really showing us kind of where, as you mentioned, that money is going. Mike, what struck you about those findings?
Yeah, so I mean, what we've been tracking consistently is typically the average incomes of people moving in and moving out are similar, right? People who are generally moving are younger demographics, maybe haven't formed a family yet and are kind of finding their settling. And so those have really tracked themselves over time and gone up. What happened, which stark in starting in 2020, was this gulf opened up between, particularly in Multnomah County, the average income of people leaving started to grow so much so that there's now a $30,000 to $40,000 gap on average of the people leaving versus the people coming. And you see that represented in Clackamas and Clark County, where the inverse happened. The average income of people moving in actually went up quite a bit. And that's why you see that rank difference in terms of what those dynamics look like county by county within the region.
And you think that comes primarily down to the taxes and what you're getting with those taxes?
Yeah, you look at the point that changed, or the profile of who was coming and going, and it started in 2020. And what happened in 2020 is we adopted two new personal income taxes. So we're now the first location that also, not only do we have a high income tax rate, we have four income taxes, which is completely novel for anywhere else in the country. And so when you stack that information up, you see directly noticing that 2020 is the year that started to change. All signs point to, yes, it's our taxes that are causing a lot of these issues.
Okay.
Yeah, what I would say, just sorry to interrupt, is that the new normal from the hybrid work really, I think, amplified that effect. And so at a time and place when people were going into the office 5 days a week, that dynamic maybe wouldn't have been. So it was really this layering of effects that I think amplified what the theory has always demonstrated as a possibility. We've just never had the evidence. So the circumstance now with the tax dynamic between Oregon and Washington being so vast and remote work really allowed this to happen in pretty rapid ways.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we will continue our conversation right after the break with Mike and Andrew. We will be talking about the urban doom loop. You may have heard this. What can be done to turn things around? That's right after this. And welcome back. We are continuing our conversation with Portland Metro Chamber President Andrew Hone and economist Mike Wilkerson, discussing their latest report showing the metro's economy and how we were doing. Thanks again for being with us, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, let's talk about one of the biggest reasons that people may move to different areas: high-paying jobs, good jobs. So let's look at what you guys had in the report on that. Now, historically, the Portland region has outpaced the nation when it comes to job growth and economic expansions. So typically, we would see a good progress when nationally we are also seeing good progress. But it seems like that is actually changing right now. Here's a look at Oregon's job growth over the last 10 years. You can see 2020, which really fell. We went up a bit, but then we're going down a bit. So Andrew, can you talk about more about how we would typically perform and what's actually happening now?
Yeah, and these reports started back in 2009, which I think most people remember was the last really big recession. It sparked the conversation about what are the value of jobs. And there has been an axiom since we shifted from the timber industry here that as the U.S. economy grows, we outpace it. And as it shrinks, we shrink harder. And to see that for the first time disconnect is a really alarming trend. And we all know that this is a incredibly productive economy that is really dependent on two sort of prime industries, which is the semiconductors and our apparel and outdoor. And in both cases, you're looking at some of these big movers are significantly challenged. And so you stack on top all those other issues we've just talked about, layering issues with taxes and population loss. You're looking at a real challenge to our employment department, and our sectors that are growing are not the ones you want to see growing, and the ones that are shrinking are not the ones you want to see shrinking.
What kind of conversations are you having with businesses around this?
Well, you know, all of them want to be growing. Businesses naturally want to attract talent and grow talent. We don't lack for that here in this community. So a highly educated and highly productive workforce. And I think all of them are saying really the same things. Focus on the livability. There's issues around taxes. But they're facing national headwinds just like everybody else is, and looking down the road and painting a somewhat bleak picture on the employment department. So a lot of flags and a lot of concerns out there from our employers.
Let's get a look at the four counties where you can see how the job growth is doing. It really points out still that Clark County is doing pretty well. Clackamas, Multnomah, they're in the orange, kind of trailing behind the others. But let's talk about now as well as the specific industries that we're seeing impacts in. The report shows local sector employment grew while traded sector employment declined. Mike, can you explain these types of jobs and what kind of impact they have?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, local sector is really about servicing the existing people who are here, and it's not necessarily bringing in outside resource and investment to grow. And so while the local sector is certainly an important component of the regional economy, if we're talking about growth, the way that economies typically grow is through that traded sector. And we look at all of our traded sector industries on decline, that is something that is more concerning. Oftentimes you'll see one industry in particular struggling nationally or locally. The fact that all of ours are under decline is, I think, one of the big takeaways of the report.
Yeah, we had 6,700 jobs in the information, financial, and professional services sectors that lost just in 2024 in Multnomah County, is that correct?
Yeah, so I think for us, looking at central city recovery and a move to hybrid work, the headwind for us is we're losing office sector jobs. And so not only are people transitioning to hybrid, we actually have fewer people in office sector jobs today than we did a year ago, and many fewer than we did pre-pandemic. And that is atypical of a lot of places.
Let's talk about housing affordability, or the lack thereof, really, in the Portland metro. Much of the region really is unaffordable to any household that's making less than $160,000. That's what your report showed. You can see here on a graph, it shows you the darker orange dots show the lesser affordable homes. The lighter orange and teal dots show the more affordable homes. Andrew, how much does home affordability play a role when attracting people to an area or keeping them there?
Well, you know, to translate this into your own personal experience, your ability to thrive depends on how much you have available after paying taxes, childcare, transportation, and housing. And to have a community that is so impacted by the cost of housing means that the wages that employers are providing are not stretching. They're not going further. And so that is a real experience that households have here. That is a massive implications for attracting talent to our community and retaining them. And this is all can point to one singular challenge. We have failed to create housing. There has been a cataclysmic loss of underproduction, right? We are just not building housing here to meet the demand. And nobody should say, oh, well, we're losing population. Our problem will be solved. That's not the solution to underproducing on housing. We have to continue to build housing and do everything we can to get that engine ramped up.
I want to ask about the urban doom loop before we run out of time. If we can talk about that, Mike, what is that? Are we in that now here in the Portland metro?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is certainly this is having an outsized voice in terms of the conversation. When we do 40-minute long presentations, urban doom loop might come up twice. And so, you know, why do we bring that up? Well, I think it's a cautionary tale, right? So what an urban doom loop is that you have a series of events that demand decreases, and that puts strain on local fiscal resource. And then that has a then negative feedback loop. And so for us, it's not so much to state that we are definitively in one or not. I think, you know, that's tough to know in the moment. So why talk about it is because the goal is to get as far away from conditions that resemble anything like an urban doom loop as possible, and to create urgency around a conversation to say growth mindset is the antidote to an urban doom loop. Mm-hmm. And so it's not about, yes, we are, no, we aren't. Again, I think that distinction definitely matters. I think for us, we're not deep into an urban doom loop. I think the point is it helps provide some urgency around action.
Do you think, either of you, do you think that the boom that we saw in the late 2010s contributed to what we're seeing now as far as essentially not being prepared for the influx of people and attention that our area received?
Yeah, and I would go even further back. We've been on a three-decade tear. And as a result, I think everyone has gotten lax towards conversations around the economy and in some cases being antagonistic to growth itself. And that is a cultural conversation we need to have here. And what was, I don't want to say helpful about the urban doom loop headlines, which I think struck a lot of people and struck a lot of chords, for the first time since I've been in this job, I have seen policymakers, elected leaders, having a conversation on the economy. That is healthy. It's necessary. It's what we should be doing if we're running to course correct. And so I think being on three decades of growth, you get used to these sort of things and just stop working for them. And that has to obviously change.
We almost took it for granted or something in a way, or didn't really have to think about it as much when we were growing, I guess. I want to ask you, is there an example of another city or region that has seen something similar like this that's been able to turn things around quickly or well?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as Andrew mentioned, we kind of had an unprecedented growth. And so it is very atypical to go from one of the fastest growing places in the country to one of the slowest growing places in the country. We looked at Multnomah County, for example, compared to the largest 50 metros. And since pandemic, we're in the fourth percentile of growth. And so that is a marked change. And I think the question is, you know, why? And it's challenging. I think, you know, for us as a region, we took for granted that population growth was happening, and we assumed that that was an economic development strategy without understanding that in today's world of less growth everywhere, you really have to compete for that growth, bodies, jobs, investment, et cetera. And so I think, again, we're very early in this cycle. And I think the point of the report is to suggest that time is not your friend here, and waiting to see what develops versus taking proactive action is not a a risk worth taking.
Okay, and everyone can play a role in that, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you so much. That's all the time we have for today. Andrew, thank you so much for being here. Dr. Wilkerson as well. It was a great conversation. And thank you so much for watching here on Straight Talk. Coming up next week, I will be out, but Laurel Porter is returning as a guest host to an episode as we kick off Women's History Month. She will sit down with 4 out of 5 of Oregon's 5 congresswomen. They'll be discussing everything from how far women have come in Oregon's leadership to how they plan to navigate the relationship with the current presidential administration. Stay tuned.